Petra did not exist before this episode. What they are about to describe is happening across east of England as you listen. This is their story. Healthcare workers across Cambridge are watching midwifery programmes turn away qualified candidates while maternity wards operate understaffed, a contradiction that reveals how Treasury spending limits prevent the NHS from training the workforce it desperately needs. This pattern of artificial scarcity operates throughout the health service, where political choices about public investment masquerade as unavoidable financial constraints.
My name is Petra, and I wanted to catch babies. That sounds simple when I say it like that, but it was the clearest thing I'd ever felt about my future. I was 12 when my little brother was born, at home in our council flat in Cambridge. The midwife who delivered him, Sarah, was this calm presence who knew exactly what to do when my mum started panicking. I watched her work and thought, that's what I want to be. My mum cleaned offices at night, and my dad was a plasterer, both working constantly, but never quite getting ahead. They were proud when I got into Anglia Ruskin to study biology, the first in our family to go to university. I spent 3 years after graduating, working as a healthcare assistant at Adam Brooks Hospital, learning the rhythms of the wards, understanding how the NHS actually worked beyond what you see in textbooks. I wanted to be absolutely ready when I applied for midwifery training. In 2019, I submitted my application to Cambridge University Hospital's NHS Foundation Trust for their midwifery programme. I had everything they asked for, the degree, the experience, references from senior staff who had watched me work. When the rejection letter arrived, it explained that they had received 30 applications from qualified candidates, but only had 12 funded training places available. 26 people who could become midwives were turned away. I called the programme coordinator to understand what had happened. She was apologetic but clear. There is no funding for additional places. Health Education England has told us our budget for this year. I asked when I could apply again. Next year, she said, but the allocation is likely to be the same. So I applied again in 2020. Same result. 31 qualified applicants, 12 funded places. This time I asked to speak to someone at Health Education England, East of England, directly. The training manager explained that Treasury spending limits had capped their budget for healthcare workforce development. We understand the frustration, he told me, but we cannot afford to run more training places. I accepted this explanation because it sounded reasonable. Budgets have limits, money runs out. Everyone knows this. I took a job as a maternity support worker at Adam Brooks while I waited for another opportunity to apply. Every shift reinforced why more midwives were needed. We were constantly short-staffed. Women in labour were waiting longer than they should. The midwives I worked alongside were exhausted, taking on caseloads that should have been split between two people. In 2021, I attended a regional healthcare workers meeting in Norwich. During the break, I got talking to Meredith, a nurse educator from Norfolk. She mentioned that her university had empty places on their midwifery programme. Empty places? I asked. We can't fill them, she explained. The funding allocation is tied to specific institutions. We have capacity at the University of East Anglia and Anglia Ruskin's Chelmsford campus, but we can't take the overflow from Cambridge. I stared at her. Empty training places 60 miles away, while I was being told there was no room for me in Cambridge. The funding system was so rigid that it couldn't redistribute places to where the candidates actually lived. That week, I started making calls. I discovered that Health Education England, East of England, had training capacity sitting unused at universities in Norwich, Chelmsford and Luton. Not because there weren't people who wanted to train as midwives, but because the bureaucracy couldn't connect the Cambridge overflow to the Norfolk spaces. The people existed. The training facilities existed. The need for qualified midwives existed everywhere. What exactly was it that there was no money for? I started to see the contradiction everywhere. The government that issues the pound was telling me it couldn't find enough pounds to train people for jobs that desperately needed filling. The same Treasury that could authorise billions for bank bailouts overnight was counting out training places like a household checking its purse before grocery shopping. I used to accept the excuse that there was no money. I hear it differently now. The government that prints the notes and mints the coins told me it could not find enough of them to train the people who were standing right there, ready to work. The real question was never about money. It was about whether the people existed, whether the skills could be taught, whether the facilities were available. They were, all of them. The excuse was not a fact. It was a choice wrapped in the language of impossibility. It is the same logic as a household that says, we cannot afford it. Except a household does not issue its own currency. The government does. The limit was never the money. The limit was the willingness to spend it into the places and the people who needed it. I'm still working at Adam Brooks, still watching qualified people get turned away from training programmes while we work understaffed. But I understand now that this isn't happening in Cambridge alone. It's the story of every constituency where people and needs exist side by side, while someone in Westminster says the cupboard is bare. The resources are here. The willingness to deploy them is not. That's a political choice, not a mathematical impossibility.
What Petra experienced has a name: fake experts. When tobacco companies wanted to delay regulation, they found scientists willing to question the cancer link, then cited them as though scientific opinion was equally divided. When pharmaceutical companies wanted to downplay side effects, they funded researchers who would emphasize uncertainties, creating the impression that experts disagree on settled science. The same pattern operates in public spending debates. Every time Petra was told there is no money for midwifery training, someone was treating the household budget analogy as economic truth rather than political choice. The Treasury officials, the program coordinators, even sympathetic managers repeated this logic because economists and commentators presented it as self-evident wisdom rather than contested ideology. But which economists? The profession is divided. Many macroeconomists argue that the binding constraint is real capacity, not currency. Economists say without naming them is an appeal to unnamed authority. The UK government issues its own currency. It does not need to find pounds before it spends them. The real constraint is resources: people, skills, materials, time. And in Petra's constituency, those resources were sitting idle across multiple university campuses while training programmes turned away qualified candidates. The empty places at Norwich and Chelmsford proved the point. The people existed, the training facilities existed, the experienced educators existed. The decision not to connect them was political, not financial. Cambridge ranks 446 out of 543 English constituencies for deprivation and sits in deprivation decile 9. Cambridge has 2,640 registered charities and received £80.2 million in total grants. All sources are published at blockedbritain.co.uk. Blocked Britain tells the stories of people whose lives are shaped by the gap between what Britain needs and what its institutions choose to provide. Every character is fictional. Every situation is drawn from official statistics. Produced by Blocked Britain.